Hey, what's going on, No Bad Dog Army? Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast with me, your host, TD. So happy that you guys are here today. I had this like crazy head cold come and go, so my voice is a little deeper than normal. I don't sound like a complete girl today, so there's that. This is a good podcast with a lot of this isn't one question, one problem. This is like three or four dogs with a lot of different things. This is an individual who just bought a farm out in the Midwest and has two Great Pyrenees puppies that are learning how to protect the farm from coyotes and other predators, as well as integrate them in with their pets and golden retrievers, and they're having tiffs, and there's a lot going on. So I recorded two other podcasts last week, and I think I'm just going to move with this one because this one I think is a lot more beneficial for you guys. This also touch bases on something that we get a lot of questions about, which is resource guarding. It's not a podcast on resource guarding, although we are going to do that in the future. So anyway, this is a great podcast with a dog owner who has a lot of different variables going on. So there's a lot of good information in here. At the end of the podcast, I'm going to be answering three of your dog training questions. So make sure you listen to the end for more of the viewers or listeners podcast. Viewers in the future, our podcast studio is almost done. We will definitely start filming before the end of the year and putting those up on socials for you guys to meet my staff and to have guests on, and that's going to be exciting. So anyway, thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget, we are going on tour next month, so we have availability for Texas, Florida, and LA for audit spots. And every single stop that we're doing obviously free meet and greets where you guys can come out, take pictures. I want to see you guys. I want to meet you guys. So make sure you follow me on Instagram and turn on your notifications. The Instagram algorithm and YouTube algorithm is so weird. And I'm telling you, I can't imagine how many messages I get from people saying, I had no idea you were here. Make sure you turn on your notifications because you won't see my post likely. Unless you're a super fan and you're on my stuff every second, you're not going to see anything I put out, unfortunately. And that's on YouTube and on Instagram. So make sure you turn on your notifications. And in the link below, we also have a email list where we're going to be doing monthly emails for updates and stuff. But obviously on tour, I'm going to be announcing the meet and greet locations the day of, just because we don't know what's going to happen and the venues we're going to be in, the weather. So anyway, make sure you turn on your notifications. I want to meet you guys. I want to hang out with you guys. This is a really fun community that we're growing in the dog space that needs it, I think. So, and last but not least, as you guys know, right now, this is something that we've never done before, but you guys can, if you guys have questions about your dog, you want to know more about your dog, you have questions on training, for the first time only of any other platform I've ever seen, you guys can join the members club and get access directly to my personal staff. So I have hired my dog training staff at the Upstate Canine Academy. They're now in the pro team in the members club to answer your questions as often as you want, every day, every other day, every week. And the members club has so much value, an incredible amount of value. You're getting $100,000 worth of dog training information in there of all the uncut stuff I've done with all of my clients, as well as now you have access and to consult with my personal staff. Two of them, Julia and Kyle, are in there, and it might change in the future, but it's huge. It's invaluable. If you guys want to know more about your dogs, you want questions, you have questions, join the members club, support the movement, just regardless. Like, even if we get a lot of questions on like, how can I support you? You've helped me so much with the free podcast, the free YouTube. Like, if you guys want to be part of the club, if we're going to change it to an online university soon, join the members club. Link in the description below. Let's get into the podcast.
Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
So my main thing is we have three inside dogs, and Cooper is our middle dog. We have Joey. He's our, like, he's 9 and a half. He's a golden retriever. Then we got Cooper, who's 7 and a half. He's a golden retriever. And then we got a mastiff, and she's 4.
Okay. When you say inside dogs?
Yeah, they sleep inside. Like, they're inside most of the time.
Oh, okay.
And then we moved from Washington to Wisconsin and bought a farm.
Amazing.
And so we recently just got two Great Pyrenees that are going to be our outside dogs.
Got it. So that makes sense now that you say inside dogs. I was like, I've never.
Like, we were kind of
Yeah. Usually it's like inside cats or whatever, but.
Oh, yeah. We have lots of cats on our property too.
Sure. So. Sure.
But anyway, so when we got Luna, our Mastiff, our middle dog Cooper, the golden retriever, he was very reactive to her, and he had done this at dog parks that I had taken him to. So I stopped taking him to dog parks, and so then he hasn't been around any other dogs really for a long time. And then we got the puppies, and they're like 16 weeks old already. So we just got them last week, and we're trying to figure out the best way to introduce like the dogs to them. Like Joey's fine. Joey can go out and like, he'll play with them. He's fine with all dogs. And then we've been trying to take Cooper and Luna just like one at a time, just walking them down, down through the farm and back. And we've done that twice with Cooper. And one time Cooper like kind of wanted to go over and sniff them, we've kind of just let them be a little bit away from each other so they get to see each other. Like he sees them through the window all the time. He knows that they're there. Mm-hmm. But when he went to sniff them, what he does is he doesn't growl or give any warning. He just immediately bites.
This is Cooper.
Yeah, Cooper does.
Okay.
So he walked up to the puppies like on his own, but then as soon as he got there, he just bit one. And he doesn't like bite like attack bite. He just bites and then stops.
Okay.
And then that puppy's like crying, because I don't know if he hurt him or if he just like, that's how the puppy reacts to it. Like, and so we haven't let them be around each other like that again. And except yesterday we did take them out, like walk down it's maybe a quarter mile, walk them down and back near each other. And we would stop sometimes and just like let them all sit. They would be like maybe 20 feet away from each other. Mm-hmm. And Cooper knows they're there. Like sometimes my husband walks the puppies in front of us. Sometimes he walks them behind us. Like he's aware that they're there. But as soon as we like have them sit, Cooper purposely like just turns away from them.
Like, okay.
So I don't know like what's wrong with it. We just want to know like how we can introduce him without like him hurting anyone.
Okay.
If that makes sense. And maybe be less reactive to any other dogs. Like if someone wanted to bring their dog over, we don't feel comfortable with Cooper being around other dogs.
Right.
Because I don't understand how he does that or why he does it. So
yeah. Okay. So Cooper is now almost correcting the puppies out of nowhere, sounds like.
Yeah, I mean the puppies, like he walked up and like he like, you know, to go sniff them, and the puppies thought he just wanted to sniff like the other dogs do. Mm-hmm. And like he just immediately bit one.
Okay. Okay, got it. So I would say right now the puppies are new for Cooper, and mm-hmm. obviously, is Cooper fixed or no?
Yeah, Cooper's fixed. The puppies are not yet,
right,
because
right.
They were on a farm. They have don't even have vaccines yet. So
no. Yeah, of course. So got it. So right now, I would say your objective and goal is to try to figure out why Cooper is doing these things, as well as how to prevent it in the future. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. So if you were to Okay, so I think it sounds like a correction to me. Are the puppies doing anything to Cooper? Are they like jumping on him? Are they?
No. I mean, they were just standing there, like going to sniff him.
Okay, and then he turned around and
like,
then...
and that seems to be like when he had problems like this when it was at a dog park. Mm-hmm. So when he was young, I would take him and Joey to dog parks. I also took him to Cooper to like a playtime thing, you know, like at Petco.
Yeah.
Where there's just a bunch of puppies his size. But when I would take him to dog parks, it got to the point where like I don't know how to explain this. He seems like a little neurotic to me, but like he would come over by me, and then if a dog came near him, like then he would just attack him. Like, and I don't know if it had something to do with me particularly, or if it's just he just doesn't like other dogs being in his space.
Well, it could be both.
He doesn't really know how to like I don't know. It doesn't seem like he knows how to like meet dogs. Does that make sense?
It
but
does,
he has.
Yeah.
He had. Yeah, but he had been like going to the dog park regularly before that and mm-hmm. been fine. And then he just started doing it. I didn't know. I don't remember anything particular happening. But yeah. Again, a lot of times things happen and we're not aware of it because we're humans and like I don't know all the dog characteristic type things that happen.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's protectiveness potentially. It's I don't really want to be here because some I think everyone thinks that dogs are this like they need to be with everybody or they want mm-hmm. to be with everybody and or they need to be friendly with everybody. And mm-hmm. I think people are assuming that when they go to a space where there's other dogs, because their dog is friendly with them in their pack at home, then mm-hmm. that means that they're going to be friendly with the other dogs when they go out. Mm-hmm. And that's not always the case, obviously. That's not what happens. So I think your job mm-hmm. right now is to try to figure out exactly what his boundaries are as a dog, of like what Cooper mm-hmm. likes, what he doesn't like. And mm-hmm. that's not necessarily catering to say, oh, if you don't like other dogs, like you can go and bite them. It's more mm-hmm. about if you don't like other dogs, I'm going to manage how you live your life around other dogs. And that's normal.
Mm-hmm. And which is what we have been doing up to this point. Mm-hmm. And like getting the outside dogs now that are going to like guard our cows and stuff like that. Like our biggest thing is, you know, sometimes the gate gets left open. And if the dogs do, like if Cooper got out and was out on the in the middle of the farm and saw them, we just want them to be able to be like, okay, hey, I know who you are. I'm fine. While we're running after Cooper to get him, then he doesn't like go after the dogs or like, we just want them to be able to like be familiar enough with each other to not, because they probably like, I mean, our older dog does, he just loves all animals. So,
yeah.
I mean, we're fine if he goes out and plays with them some, but the other two dogs are more like, if you don't ever want to be around him, you don't have to, but if something comes up where you are exposed, we don't want it to be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, again, like that's what I was talking about, is like that management portion where I'm just thinking off the top of my head because it's raining here, but it would be the equivalent to if you have something outside, like yesterday we bought this table for my podcast studio and like I have to make sure, like I brought it down last night to the studio because I didn't want it to get rained on today because I knew it was going to rain. My point is if I'm like, oh, it's looking like it's going to rain, I have a expensive table in the back of my truck exposed, I need to take care of this. This is my job. Mm-hmm. This is my management system. Mm-hmm. So that's where a lot of, I think what you can be doing is important for you in making sure that, again, like you can't, we get this question a lot where, oh, if he gets out, the kids let him out, the neighbor lets him out, the workers let him out, the goats let him out, whatever, and this dog gets out, you can't say, like, I don't want him to, it doesn't sound like he's going to go and kill anything. It just sounds like he doesn't really like mm-hmm. the puppies. And mm-hmm. I think also, too, puppies for dogs who are like Cooper and kind of, I don't know, just like a grumpier dog that's like, meh, mm-hmm. get away from me. I think it would just be this correction that he's already doing. Like they're going to come running up and be like, hey, like what's up? Mm-hmm. And then he's going to correct him and the puppies are going to tail tuck, squeal and run away. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that's what's been happening, which is very normal type of behavior. Obviously we don't want that to happen, especially uh-huh. as the Pyrenees gets bigger, because then the little squall is going to be a little bit more potentially dangerous for both of them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But at the same time, as the GPs start to get bigger, then the reactivity and the corrections from Cooper will decrease because they're starting to learn how to be dogs as well. Mm-hmm. So I guess my point to you is there's, you can't do anything about I mean, again, it's just like human behavior. You're like, I send my kids off into the world, into first, second, third, mm-hmm. fourth grade, college, and we've done everything we can to teach them how to be respectful and cautious mm-hmm. and careful and whatever. But mm-hmm. when they're gone and out there by themselves, you can't do anything. Like, they just have to make good decisions. But yeah. your job is to also make sure you're putting them into as much situations that's going to make them successful as possible. And mm-hmm. outside of that, it's out of your hands. Mm-hmm. So the best thing you can do is, again, let's just say Cooper's not going to like these dogs, whatever.
Yeah.
Then
I think he will eventually. I just think it's just because he did this with our Mastiff for probably, I would say, like about a month. Like he would just he'd be fine with her. And then all of a sudden he'd just like, So, I mean, I know that like it's our job to manage it. Like, do you see any benefit of what we're doing, or should we not like take him on little walks with the dogs? Like, do you think that's good or bad? Like,
I don't think it's bad. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's bad. No, I think it's good. I think as you keep them, if you keep them neutral, because I think mm-hmm. dog socialization, in my experience, especially working with a lot of behavioral cases, is neutrality. Mm-hmm. I think if you have one dog over here that doesn't particularly love the other dogs around and they're just out for a walk, it's good. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. what you, and this goes without saying, I just have to say it, but obviously when you're mm-hmm. out, you don't want the puppies to be antagonizing Cooper and jumping on him and hipping at his heels, because that's just mm-hmm. going to piss him off.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
So it's normal. Like, I think right now, from what you're saying, and you know best, you know your dog's best, I think you're on the money as far as this is just this puppy stage, because this is what Cooper does with puppies to kind of keep them in line. And to me, it's natural. Mm-hmm. And I used to have a dog named Lola. She was with me almost 18 years. And mm-hmm. She taught all of my puppies how to behave through corrections. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. she was very fair, is like the mm-hmm. best way to put it. Is I'm not mm-hmm. going to be micro. If I have a, like when I brought Lakota home, my Dutch Shepherd, or even my St. Bernard, when I brought him home, I let her teach these dogs. I didn't mm-hmm. micromanage anything, because I knew she was fair. She's not uh-huh. big enough and strong enough to like make a mistake, right? Where she like mm-hmm. really hurts a dog, mm-hmm. you know? So for me, I just, I think it's conditioning. So, to me, it's dogs are so conditioned on body language and sounds. Like if they, like for us, if we smell smoke, that means fire, or if we, mm-hmm. whatever. I mean, it goes, this means this, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that that's what's happening. And, you know, again, like with Lola's, I would be smart. So there's this boundary of fairness with you too. Like, I'm not going to give mm-hmm. Cooper a meaty knuckle bone and then let the puppies run around. Yeah. Obviously, you know, so there's just like this fairness that you have to have. And to me, it's like this natural balance of, because mm-hmm. you got to think, like, Cooper has come up to these puppies and mm-hmm. could have killed them within seconds and just decided mm-hmm. to say, hey, like, don't mm-hmm. be annoying to me and stay in your lane. And they're like, oh, mm-hmm.
yeah.
So there's all of that.
So here's like my question, because the thing is, like, this doesn't happen very often. So then when it does happen, like let's say we are doing the walk thing and like, you know, he looks like he wants to go up to them again. Mm-hmm. I mean, do we allow him to do that? Like, do you, then if he does that again, how is it that we're supposed to react mm-hmm. like to him and to the other dogs? Like, like, you know, like, because it's not something you get trained on. Like, if your dog bites another dog, this is what you should do. So then we're, like, what do you recommend?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, it's so, you put it so well. You don't get trained on that, right? You don't, when that happens, because you can't recreate. The reason why nobody gets trained on it
is because every situation is different.
And you can't recreate it. It's like, all right, today I'm going to learn how to handle my puppy when they correct, you know, a dog mm-hmm. or whatever. Anyway, so it's a good question. I think my recommendation is simple, is to just, you have to assertively handle the situation. And I see a lot of people who work on farms in particular, people who work with wildlife in particular, horses, goats, cows, pigs, mm-hmm. chickens, etc., animals who don't really cue off of verbiage of like left, right, down, back, yeah. no, they just, mm-hmm. they know that if you're applying pressure in some way, whether it's verbal, physical, with a mm-hmm. gait or with your body or with a mm-hmm. whatever, they learn how to yield to that stuff because they're going to get smashed in the face if they don't move, right? But mm-hmm. Handling the situation that way is like, I think the best, like if there's a squall in daycare where you get 40 dogs running around, maybe you get a new dog, maybe you get a dog that's been away for a little bit, there's going to be little tiffs and it's mm-hmm. not this big, like, no, don't, yeah. it's just assertively grabbing one dog, pulling them off, you know, tightening up on their flat collar, letting them know like, hey, this isn't appropriate, maybe putting them, you know, just kind of manhandling, you know, air quote, manhandling them a little bit to say, hey, no, we're not, you just have to, what I mean by this is it's not like pinning them down or being rough with them. And it's just grabbing and being like, no, this isn't happening. So you, mm-hmm. so there's that, there's really all that you can do. But as far as Cooper kind of going up to the puppies, in my opinion with you, because you're on a, sounds like what's starting to create a working farm, or it's already a farm, mm-hmm. so you have fencing. So take advantage of that fencing and use the chain links, the chicken wire, any fence that has mm-hmm. this see-through barrier. That's a mm-hmm. great way for them to acclimate with one another very safely mm-hmm. because you don't have to worry about anything. Mm-hmm. So, and then the other thing is just experience of if the puppies are out walking. The problem is when Cooper goes to engage with the puppies are going to turn around and want to play, or they're going to want to mm-hmm. turn around and, or they're not, they're going to be scared and they're going to run mm-hmm. away, and it's going to yeah. create this prey drive. And now Cooper's going to be chasing them around. It's going to be this thing. Yeah. So really it's just experience. There's nothing I can give you that's going to be like,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know? So the other thing is, I mean, if you really want to get, down to it, the other thing that you could do also is muzzle training with Cooper.
Yeah, I was watching your videos and I noticed you use that a lot, and I'm like, I don't know, like I was gonna ask you, like, is that something you would recommend or not recommend? Like I've never
yeah
seen someone use one.
Yeah, well, you know, muzzle training is just one of those things that allow us to be safe. So mm-hmm. So say we muzzle condition him for a week and he's like, okay, mm-hmm. this thing's great, I don't care. I'll use this whenever, right? Mm-hmm. That's cool. You know, that's totally cool. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like he's like, okay, this is great, I don't really care about this, whatever. Mm-hmm. What then gives you an opportunity is then you're going to be able to use that muzzle in situations where the puppies are around, and you can, mm-hmm. again, same thing without the, you can basically have your cake and eat it too, where you're like, hey, you can go out and do what you want, be a dog, do what you would normally do. It'll give you an opportunity to really see how he's going to be with the dog safely. And so mm-hmm. that's the other option that you could do too, is just allow them to be out and be dogs and be okay with each other there that way. Yeah.
I had a question about that just because I have never used a muzzle before. Mm-hmm. If you have, like, let's say Cooper has a muzzle on because he got comfortable with it and we feel good with it. Mm-hmm. If he goes out and he's with them, but they don't have a muzzle on, like, and they can, like, chew on him, like, you know, like puppies yeah. like to bite at things. Like, is that going to be, like, will that make it a stressful, like, unfair thing? Or is it fine? Like, that's what I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, again, like, your job is to kind of manage the situation to see
just
how it
make
goes.
Sure that they're
yeah.
not doing that.
It's you have two options in that context. Is they're going to chew on his muzzle and kind of play with him and be like, mm-hmm. oh, what's this? Because I'm a puppy. Or they're going to chew mm-hmm. on his jowls and then he has immediate access to do whatever he wants to do. So I just think, mm-hmm. to be honest, like right now, if you guys just have them in neutrality with one mm-hmm. another as you go about and work with these dogs, you know, I don't think you're going to have any problems with them kind of getting mm-hmm. acquainted, just because, you know, it sounds like after a little bit, he's going to be fine with the dogs anyway. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, yeah. So.
Okay. I have a couple other questions just about general training.
Sure.
I didn't know if like I could ask you those.
Yeah,
I didn't
of course.
Know. I know you said I have an hour, but I didn't know like if it had to be only Cooper's.
No. Talk about whatever.
Obviously, we have these new dogs, and they're actually doing really good. We like them a lot. Mm-hmm. As far as like, it's funny for me just because I'm like, this is so nice not potty training a dog.
Yeah.
Because they're just outside. We know that the Pyrenees like. They're guard dogs. We know that they bark. If like one of them gets into just like a loop of barking and like he just isn't stopping, like if, even if there's nothing there, mm-hmm. like last night there were coyotes maybe like a mile away. You could hear them and he was barking at them. Mm-hmm. But then he was like on high alert and he just kept barking and barking and barking and barking. Even long after they were gone. Is there a way to like intercede that, like be like, okay, you did your job now, but it's time to like stop? Because I know he's just kind of, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there
like a correction, but not correcting him because that's what his job.
Yeah, I would just be yeah. I mean, you get it. You know, I just think like a verbal, hey, thanks for letting me know is going to be okay, but when you're bringing up, excuse me, and raising. Livestock dogs for being livestock dogs. It's a beautiful thing, really. It's this magical coming into themselves type thing that a lot of dogs unfortunately don't get to do. Like mm-hmm. that's like my main. It's not my main thing, but. I mean, if more people could understand what dogs are supposed to be doing, we wouldn't need as much training as we do. So anyway, I kind of study this a lot and I find it fascinating. And so, you have to let these dogs kind of figure. How old are the puppies?
They're 16 weeks.
Okay. So they're still pretty young.
Yeah. So when we got them last week, they were living out in a pasture with their mom mm-hmm. and one of the pups, mm-hmm. and they were like probably 200 turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And like the turkeys were caged like in a like enclosure, and then the dogs were on the outside of that enclosure in a pasture.
Mm-hmm. So yep, cool. That's
so far,
yeah, I would do the best you can to. Kind of allow them to do what they feel like they need to do without giving them a lot of pressure. That's what I would do. I mean, but I just think in the future, like a verbal, hey, knock it off. Thanks for letting me know. Like if it becomes habitual, but you just have to be very careful about that just because, you know, like they're going to try to, this is like the interesting thing is you're going to try to figure out the difference in barking. So that's mm-hmm. why, you know, it's important for them to bark through certain things because their tone and their rhythm of their barking is going to change predicated off of the animal and how close they are. Uh-huh. So right now it just seems like they're trying to figure out like what's coming into their head naturally. They smell coyotes. They hear the coyotes. So they're kind of like going like, hey, something's telling me I should let you know about this, Ma, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think just, you know, from your standpoint, it's like, I would almost go out and this is, I don't know how you're going to do this, but the way that you should be handling this is like, hey man, thanks. Great. Thank you. Thanks for letting me know. So yeah, you're rewarding the behavior of course, but also it you know what I mean? Like it is a rewarding thing, but you have to, it's just like with kids. They're letting you know like, hey, something's here. And you're like, okay, thank you. Got it. Now quietly, just relax, you know, knock it off. So, you know, I think that there's this, it's just going to take time for them to figure out what they need to do. But I would just be very cautious about giving them any pressure for barking when a threat to your farm is there for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Okay. They tend to like to dig, and we didn't know if there was anything that like helps deter that.
Yeah, there is. That's something that I think you can certainly, you know, be like, hey, knock it off. You know, and correct that behavior for sure. But it's going to take some time for them. So my thing is like, there's going to be certain things, like with any type of dog that you're raising or any type of dog that you're teaching or anything that you teach, to say, hey, go out and have fun, but these are the things you can't do. And right now, you probably don't have the tools and relationship and guidelines to communicate to the dog that what they're doing is wrong. So if they're out and they're guarding and they're posturing and they're barking and they're chasing, all the things that you would want these dogs to do, that's good. But the moment they start to maybe dig or they start to bark at things they shouldn't, that's where you have to have that, okay, hey, knock it off. But that, okay, knock it off, is probably going to come more from leash training than anything, because it's a quicker, more efficient display of control. So there's, and I think the real defining thing here is accountability. So when you say, hey, knock it off, and they're like, that sounds like you're upset, or that sounds different from what you normally talk to me like, and it scares me, it startles me, it upsets me, whatever. But it may not stop them from digging at all, or anything else for that matter that they instinctually want to do. So I think spending more time with the outside dogs on leash is going to be a good idea for you. So that's what I would recommend to do, is to get them on the leash and start teaching them like boundaries and limitations and thresholds. And I'd be working on leave it and things like that. But they're puppies, they're bored. They're going to dig, they're going to chew.
Gonna... All these are old puppy things, but we also don't want them to become ingrained habits. So it's what's that balance? And then, so because they're like always together, sometimes they like separate in the backyard, they'll go different areas and stuff like that, but pretty much they're always together. I wanted to start like doing some, like the training and stuff with them on the leash. But it's better if my husband and I both do it at the same time, or if I take one separately to a different area of the farm and like he does. Because I don't know how much they will feed off each other or not pay attention when they're with each other. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I would say it's a good idea to do them separately for sure. But you have to just be careful about I would just say in general, training them separate is huge. So that's what I would recommend, is training them separate and working them separate, and just making sure between you and your husband that you guys are consistent is the most important thing when you're doing this.
Yeah. So I'm that's the one thing, like we know we're different in every aspect of our whole lives. But he's letting me, I was going to like ask you another question real quick. I wanted to get one of your training things, like I know you have a basic training or an e-car
my course
training.
Yeah.
Which one would you recommend like to start with if they're 16?
The Kickstarter course for sure is is the best. So one,
the plan is, because my husband and I have discussed this, is like we are very different on how we like kind of correct dogs and this stuff, but we know that with these dogs we need to be consistent. So I would to do all the training with them to begin with initially, and I'm going to teach him like how it goes after I get some control of them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The beauty of the course too is he can watch that after you're done with it, or watch it with you. So it's this very sustainable thing where you're like, hey, I'm going to watch this. I'm done with it. You need to watch it, because this is how I'm going to start training the pups. Yeah. And so that way he knows, and that's the beauty of courses in general, is it's scalable and it's consistent. You know, it's like when you, even if you come in for training, and we see this often, if you come in for training, you're going to forget a lot of the stuff. You're going to say things wrong. And with the courses, it's the same information. It's like, hey, I want you to watch this, because this is what we need to start doing, you know? So.
At what age do you recommend like being able to use like an e-collar on dog?
Yeah, really the answer to that is once the dogs understand what you're asking them to do on the remote collar is when you can start applying the remote collar. So okay. I know it doesn't give you the exact answer you're looking for. But
no, I know. No, that does answer it.
Okay, yeah. Because you're introducing the remote collar in conjunction with the dog's understanding of, you know, what you're asking them to do off leash. So, yeah, mm-hmm. It's a good question, but really it comes down to making sure that you're using it appropriately and the dog understands what you're asking. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Okay. And with, like, the Great Pyrenees, we know, like boundaries are a big deal. Otherwise, they will not. We have never used, like, one of those type of, like, electric fence type things, or you know what I mean? Like, the with an e-collar type thing or whatever, however that worked. Is that something you think that they would respond to or no?
Yeah, for sure. Especially if you started early, yeah, the answer is yes. You have to really understand that when you're working with dogs in general, the e-collar is just a tool, right? It's just a polishing, finishing touch on what you're already doing. So the earlier you do it with boundaries, like what a lot of people do, unfortunately, is they get any dog. It doesn't matter if it's a Great Pyrenees, it's a Shepherd, it's a Husky or whatever. And then they just think, I'm just going to wait for, basically what ends up happening realistically is they wait for there to be problems. And once the problems start happening, then they're like, okay, I'm going to start training now. And it's like, you want to be proactive instead of reactive.
We don't want to have any problems.
Yeah. So that's the deal. That's how you work on those things is you start just training now. Boundaries, rules. I mean, think about anything. Anything in life. It's like, hey, do you want to start this when these things are sponges and they learn how to behave in the first place? Or do we want to wait for them to get 100 pounds and have no boundaries and no structure and then we'll start working on the basics? So you start off now. Like I said, that Kickstarter course is perfect for you. And then after your dog knows those, it kind of goes in order. After your dog knows those things in the Kickstarter course, you can then transfer to off-leash stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And then I have no idea. I mean, it sounded like the guy we bought them from just threw dog food in a big dish for the four of them.
Yeah.
And the one dog has a little bit of food aggression, which I've never had to deal with before.
The puppy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you would recommend just to try to nip that early or?
Yeah. So again, like this comes down to your relationship with the dog. Like let me scale it back a little bit. So resource guarding at like a very blanketed general, what is it? It's this is mine, not yours. If you try to touch it, I'll protect it at all cost. Some dogs will growl. Some dogs will growl and bark. Some dogs will growl, bark, bite. Some dogs will take it and run. There's a lot that can, every dog is different. So I think the most important thing for you is to just not only teach the dog that they can't get away with doing that behavior, like they need to know in their head that you ultimately control and gatekeep all the really great stuff. And right now, your dogs are trying to figure, especially at that age, like right now, if it doesn't get corrected, it's going to be very dangerous for everybody involved later.
Yeah.
And resource guarding for the most part is never one of those things that end up just going away with age. It actually ends up just getting worse.
Yeah.
Because they're bigger, stronger, and faster. And now they're, instead of like biting you with their puppy teeth, they're putting you into the ER. So hand feeding works well. So if these dogs are on kibble, start taking that valuable stuff and saying, hey, this comes from me and you got to do a little obedience for it. So backpedaling, sit, good sit, pay him, recall, sit, throwing the food on the ground, telling the dog to stay, and then breaking the dog. So making sure the dog understands that all of the things that they want is going to come from you and you control that. And if a steak emerges into the abyss, you know, out of nowhere, and you say, "Ah," the dog should go, "Oh, my bad," and kind of take a step back, and then that gives you an opportunity to start working on that boundary where the dog's like, "Hey, there's a big thing from a pig roast sitting there," and you're like, "Ah," and the dog's like, "Oh man, I really want it, but I'll listen." That's impulse control and boundary setting. So it's just like with kids, right? Yeah. I say this all the time. You pull up to Disney, the kids get out of the car and run across the busy parking lot because they're happy, yeah, they're excited, and the currency of seeing Mickey Mouse is more important to them than the accountability that you're going to provide or the correction or the punishment that you're going to provide. And then it counterweighs itself. And then that's where things start to spiral out of control, is because they're always going to want to do things. And then if you're like, "Hey, you can't," and they flip you off, that's your whole relationship. So I would start putting the dog in the leash, working on hand feeding, working on making sure that the dog understands that that value that they want has to come from you. And if that valuable thing, such as a bone or kibble or whatever, is there and you say, "Leave it," the dog will respectfully back away from that until you release him back to it. And all of that is impulse control and thresholds.
Okay. And then what about, so so he was like very aggressive towards the other Pyrenees the other day, because he had found a mouse that one of our barn cats had left on the ground.
Yeah.
And so once he got it, he started to eat it. The other dog wanted some of it. And then he got really aggressive towards him. In that situation, is there something, do we correct him there or just let him, he's guarding his food? I don't, does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. So the out command is going to come in helpful. So whenever we're training with dogs, it's we're using our obedience to de-escalate and to break down certain things and disarm certain things. Just like with kids, just like with humans. So we teach humans at a very early age how to put things in A, B, C, D, E, F, G, etc. And then we teach them sentences. Why? So we can communicate and they can educate themselves throughout their life. So with dogs, it's the same thing. If we don't have an out command or we don't have a leave it command that was introduced at an early age, aka right now, and then they get something like a dead animal, and you're supposed to be like, "Hey, just knock it off." They don't understand what you're asking. So you have this 5-year-old kid running around that's never spoken English. It's like Bam Bam from Flintstones, right? Just kind of running around, bumping things on the head. And you're like, "Hey, come over here and talk to me." They don't understand "hey." They don't understand "come." They don't understand "over." They don't understand "here," and et cetera. So you can't communicate. So anything that you see, that's why, again, the No Bad Dog Kickstarter course, I created it as a puppy course in the beginning, but what I realized is it's actually a course on all the problems that my behavioral clients come in with. I never get to work with puppies. So once we started the course, I just naturally was like, "Here's the things you don't want to do." And I was like, a light bulb went off. I'm like, "Holy shit, this is not a puppy course. This is a, if you want to build a relationship with a dog, and when you're faced with inevitable behavioral challenges, this is going to give you all the ammunition in the world to be able to dismantle these situations like these dogs." So you're out and you're leave it command. Like if my dog Lakota, she has a really good understanding. I don't want to say she has a great out because sometimes she doesn't, but she has a really good understanding of what it is.
What is that?
Out is just spit it out of your mouth, whatever it is.
Oh,
out.
Drop. Okay.
Yeah, right. Drop, out, whatever you want to say. It doesn't matter. But she has that. So if she gets a hold of something, I can say out because I taught her how to out on a tug. So if she were to get an animal, I could say out and then enforce it off leash with a remote collar if she decided to say no. Because this animal that's squealing in my mouth, like say it's a rabbit or whatever, it's squealing in my mouth. I can feel feel this is as real as it gets. And people have a hard time understanding that the dog that they cuddle with on the couch is an absolute savage of a killer and loves nothing more than feeling a pulsating body dying in their mouth. Like it's morbid, but it's the 100% truth. So, and I know you know that owning a farm, you understand dogs and animals.
I didn't understand that until we got here. They'd left two barn cats, and the one is an amazing hunter. And then she had kittens because she was pregnant when we moved here. And when she was teaching them, I was fascinated by watching her teach them. Like, she'd bring them dead things first, and then she brings them live things and lets them play with it. It was just fascinating. But yeah, I mean, I get that. So that answers the question, because we have chickens that free range.
Yeah.
And we know, we've read, it's more likely one of your chickens will get caught by your dogs eventually. But that's the out thing. If they end it well. And
exactly. And that's it, right? So there's two big things into living with dogs. Doesn't matter if they're pets or they're working dogs like yourself, is it's two things, right? It's going to be two splits. And this is, again, my biggest, this will solve every single problem you've ever had with any dog ever. Two things. It's what information do they know that's going to help you apply when your dog is doing whatever it is, attacking people, attacking dogs, not coming back when called, not sitting and staying when the UPS drive. It doesn't matter what scale it's on, what variable it's on, right? And then the other part of that is what is your accountability when they don't listen if they know that behavior? Those two things right there will give you every answer that you could ever imagine to working with your dog. When, my dog just got a chicken, and I go, okay, how's your out? It doesn't exist. Well, then you're going to have to chase that dog out and get that chicken out of that dog's mouth. Good luck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, so let's just flip. Oh, my dog knows out really well. Okay. So your dog now has a squawking prey thing in his mouth. There's blood, there's heart rates, there's everything going on. And now your out doesn't matter. And this is where a lot of the dog training population unfortunately disagrees. But no, I shouldn't say a lot. I would just say that there's two sides, which is crazy. But this is where, okay, your dog is now chewing and trying to eat this thing alive because it's fun for them. And they know out, but they're like, yeah, but this is amazing. Then what is your accountability when you say out and they don't? And if it's off leash, no control, this is why banning e-collars in certain places is going to do more harm than good. It's going to kill more things than keep them alive, is because then when you get that prey driven dog off leash and it's killing a cat, a chicken, another dog, whatever it is, and you say out and they're like, yeah, but that's your ability to hold the dog accountable, to drop that thing and come back to you, and it's over. So there's two splits right there, and that will pretty much answer any dog training question that you'll ever have. And it'll also hold you accountable of as little as my dog doesn't walk nicely on the leash. And I say, does your dog know heel? You say no. And I say, we can't talk about this next. You say, well, my dog doesn't come back when I call him and I have cookies in my hand. How often has he worked on recall? Well, we don't. Next. That's, and of course, my job as a consultant and professional is to bring you through the options of how to do it. But that's kind of what immediately rolls through my head is I just want to. So anyway, I want you to take that as a whole and understand that anything that you come across with these dogs or any other dog in the future or your friend's dog, your neighbor, whatever, all the knowledge in your head is if you're having a problem, ask yourself how much time you've spent isolating, working on the problem you're having, and then go over, okay, and if it doesn't, what is my backup plan? And that's always my question to certain people who have their dogs off leash that really can't hold their dog accountable if they don't come back, which the only thing in the world to hold your dog accountable in the world off leash is a remote collar. It's the only thing that exists on this planet is modern technology. And so that's always my question to you and to other dog owners is if you're, Pyrenees, because there's certain games, right, that you'll have to play with these GPs when they're out and they're working. The coyotes will start baiting them to try to kill them. They may try to go after an animal they shouldn't. They may go after a dangerous animal like a horse and they get kicked in the face and they whatever. Mm-hmm. My point is you have to then say, how much work have I done on the things that I'm going to actually need? And then the next question is, what are you going to do to hold the dog accountable if they decide to say no? So it's always this, what is the worst case scenario that'll happen in this? And oftentimes is, well, my dog won't listen. And then the next kind of drip after that is if your dog doesn't listen in this scenario, what does that mean for your dog? Sometimes it's as brutal as death, or getting hit in the face with porcupines, or getting sprayed by a skunk, or at least just, you know, not coming home for 2 or 3 days because they're chasing a scent. But you just have to remind yourself that if there's no accountability for your dog's natural, instinctual, innate behavior, especially you're living it. You have two working dogs that are working on a farm. So you just have to make sure, that's my suggestion, is get a two-dog collar system for them. Train them well on their basics for the next 2 months, depending on how much time you have. And then start layering in the remote collar, and you'll be in really good shape.
Okay. And then I guess I have one last question because I know we're running out of time. From what I've seen on videos and stuff like that, Great Pyrenees paw a lot at people, like paw a lot, and ours do that. Is that something you think we should just let go, or is it something we should try to correct? I mean, because it's something that's kind of built into their breed. But
well, I think it's as simple as, just, again, like assertively just disengaging that. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. Mm-hmm. So if you're sitting.
Because they want you, they do it. They apparently,
attention.
They want, so just don't give them attention.
Exactly. Bingo.
Okay.
Yeah. So again, if you're sitting down watching TV and you're outside and they paw you and you turn and look at them and go, don't paw me. They're like, ding, 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 got it, next. And they do it again. So again, like you can't play that game. Like these are, dogs in particular are so conditioned beasts, right? If they get something out of a behavior and it's something they like, that's the definition of positive reinforcement is if I do something and I get something back in return that's transactional, then that's what I need to do this, right? So if I sit and I get paid, that's what I'm going to start doing, right? So if we, so again, it's just being assertive. Like if I have a dog that's like sitting there pawing at me, I'll just, I will literally, I mean, listen, I'm a dog lover. So if it's a dog that I don't know, I'll probably say what's up to him, you know? Like this guy, we were in Vermont. He's like, hey man, love your videos. And he had his dog with me and his dog was like, just this little puppy just loving up on me. And I didn't care what this dog did because I don't care, right? It's their job. Mm-hmm. It's not mine, you know? So it's your job is to kind of just ignore that, walk through that, avoid that. But again, like you got to do it across the board with your husband and anybody else that's going to be in these dogs' families, because I've seen people do that all the time is the dog will like, you're trying to ignore it and try not to make it a big deal. And then somebody else is holding the dog's paw and giving them an interview as they're doing it. Yeah. And it's like, oh man. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. Just cause we watched a lot of videos on Great Pyrenees, and that's one of the things people say, they paw, like they constantly will paw at you. And I'm like, but I don't really want them to constantly paw on me. And you know, I might have grandchildren someday and I don't want that hurt anybody because their paws are.
So that's it, you know. You just have to just think about it. It's a very simple thing, really. Dogs are we as humans, I think, overcomplicate things with our emotion, you know. They're animals. They're natural born hunters, killers, trackers, and the more we treat them like dogs, the happier they'll be, the happier you'll be with your dog. There's not this emotional expectation unrealistically applied that doesn't make any sense. The dog gets anxious and stressed and neurotic, and so do you. So really just, you know, treat them like your other animals on your farm. Just like, you're not going to go out there and, you know, sit down and powwow with the goats and the chickens and talk to them and cuddle with them. Dogs are well, you may do that, but my point is you're not expecting an answer back, you know. And so obviously dogs are domesticated, so it just kind of ruins their psyche when you expect, like, really, I mean, you're just like, don't give them that information, because then they're looking at you like you got 8 heads.
Yeah.
You know, and then their relationship with you decreases because, you know, you're talking to them too much. So.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay. That's all good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right, great. It was a pleasure, and have a good day, and good luck with everything.
Okay, thank you. You too.
All right, bye-bye. All right, you guys, you've reached the end of the podcast, which means I'm going to be answering three of your dog training questions. And if you want me to answer your questions, you guys, all you have to do is go over to the iTunes review chart, leave a review, and leave your question. That's the only way to communicate via podcast. So here we go. Mrs. Amy ML, I've been binge listened to this while walking. I'm so glad I found this podcast. I rescued Finn, a year and a half old black lab mix, 3 months ago, and I'm a first-time dog owner. I know that's not recommended for first-time owner, but I am stubborn, and I will do anything to make it work. We are in day camp training, and it's been super helpful. We also get at least 2 hours of active time daily. Great. Question. His trigger is men. I have come to realize that the more anxious as a man approaches on a walk because I'm afraid how Finn will react, I realize my error in this is how it fuels his behavior. He lunged at a male relative, so now I'm terrified he will attack somebody. He never has, and he never acted like he would, but what is your best for me to introduce him to males? He is not triggered by all males, just new ones randomly. So if you have a dog that's randomly reactive to people or the specific trigger like men, the best thing to do is, you know, control your dog in those environments. So we're going to be healing, we're going to be sitting, we're going to be placing, we're going to be staying. So you're going to make his world smaller. Don't allow him to have full access of the whole house, and don't allow him to be pulling you towards these men for him to decide if he's okay with them or not. Your obedience is number one. So like you heard in this podcast, like if you don't have good obedience, you can't touch behavioral stuff. So that's the number one. Audit that, make sure that's good. And then the other thing is get him around as many men as you possibly can that are going to completely ignore this dog. So if you are going to be introducing him to a new guy, I have several podcasts on how to introduce new people to dogs. And so just go outside, walk with this person, get them integrated in, and then have that person ignore the dog at all cost, and then just take it step by step. But recently I did an Instagram post on how you should be handling your dog as well, which is going to be really helpful for you. So it's put your shoulders straight, put your head up. A lot of times when dog owners get into fix-it mode, which is what that video is about, we have a tendency to, like you said in this question, is to make the dog more nervous. Put your head forward, put your shoulders straight, put your leash in one hand, go out and conquer the world. Your confidence is huge. So you just have to practice that, I think, separately in general. So thanks for listening, appreciate you. Next one, Stealing the Silver Lab. Literally the best. I haven't found any other podcast that's better. This helped me with my dog so much. My dog doesn't have bad behavioral problems, but I still listen and learn so much. Good job, guys. Thank you so much. Yee-yee. Juno ML. Amazing. 5 year. Wow. 5 stars. I have a 6-month-old mix that me and my partner adopted for your videos and podcasts. They're super helpful for training her. I was also wondering the difference between a slip and a choke collar. Are they the same? Good question. So a slip leash is in a leash that's attached to you at the end and it goes to the dog. And a slip collar is a regular leash that you put on the dog. And I think we used to use slip leashes or collars like every time that we would train or most times. And now we're just using slip leashes because we have stoppers that we can add. And ours are going to be restocked. Holy soon. Jeez, I'm crow. I'm just bashing my head trying to... Such a frustrating thing where I'm like, hey, I have the best that you can get, and then they just sell out and then we don't have them anymore for like 3 months. It's very frustrating. Anyway, that's the difference. One of them is a collar, one of them is a leash. They can be used the same. The difference between typically the leash and collar is the leash will have a stopper that'll keep that place in position better and safer. Next one, Dre and her poodle. 5-star review. I recently discovered your podcast and I've really enjoyed it. My almost 2-year-old standard poodle pulls in the leash. Walks are stressful and I feel like he expends most of his energy pulling. What is your opinion on harnesses? We use a front clip harness. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. Like, I just did a video on this. That's why I'm laughing. I've been told that they teach dogs to pull, but I'm afraid my dog will choke himself out. So yeah, so exactly. You're going to have to watch my recent video. Literally. This video is literally for you. These owners came in with a dog, and I changed the title to something about harnesses just because I felt like it was like that's what needs to be said. The harness has created a dog training nightmare. It's my most recent video. Watch that. It's the same thing as like, oh, I got a harness to make sure my dog doesn't pull. Is the same equivalent to say, I don't want to get a slip leash because it'll choke my dog out. Your dog is pulling. And it's way worse because now your dog isn't engaged. And this is just a side note. and this is just a podcast rant that I honestly want to do. Every single time I see it for years, I want to do like a documentary on this or a poll or a social experiment. Every single dog that I see on a harness, nose down, 4 feet in front of the owner, dragging, pulling, sniffing, zero engagement, zero engagement. The relationship between the dog and the owner is likely going to be the same as all the other dogs that are dragging their owners down the road. Just like you see, like, what is the biggest thing that dog owners come into my facility with a behavioral problem do? Drag their owners everywhere. There's no engagement. There's no accountability. There's no structure. There's no filter. There's zero connection between the dog and the owner. Zero. And likely those dogs don't listen. Except, like, I'm telling you right now, if I did a social experiment for a year, 6 months even, out of all the places I travel all over the world, and I were to go up to say, hey, I see you're on a harness, and without stating the obvious of your dog being absolutely, completely out of control, and it's not even like, it's just what I'm observing. I don't want to say it's not my opinion, but every single, like, I was just in Vermont yesterday, and I saw so many dogs on harnesses just dragging their, and their owners are just trying to talk to the person they're with and like keep their shoulder in place. And it's just a nightmare. And there's one, but the biggest thing is that dog is going to grow up without an owner. Like there's no, it's non-existent. I love you. You're cute. You live with me, but you don't listen to me. You don't look at me for guidance. You don't look at me for structure. You don't look at me for anything. The only time you pay attention to me is when I have a piece of food in my hand. The only time you'll do any behavior I ask you to do is when I crinkle a bag and I hold my arm up for bribery and the dog does the behavior for 4 seconds and gets up. The relationship is absolutely devastating. It is makes my stomach turn knowing that dog owners are so uneducated about what that's doing with their relationship versus somebody who's walking down the road that gives the dog a clear understanding of you need to walk next to me when I say to, and then I'm going to break you when you want to be a dog and when I think it's fair and applicable and appropriate. And that doesn't mean that there's just no boundaries with people with harnesses. It doesn't exist. Like, I see it all the time and I just like it. It makes me so anxious that I'm like, I just want to go up and say, do you realize that your dog's relation, like your relationship with this dog that you love probably more than anything else is terrible? Likely. What do you mean? What I mean is when you're out for your walk, that's supposed to be between you and your dog and your dog doesn't even know that you exist on that leash. And that should be a time of playing with your dog. That's what I'm talking about. Like when I go out with, look, granted, now I'm going to be fair, play devil's advocate. Granted, Lakota is a very driven dog. She's obviously a trained dog. She's my dog. When I go out anywhere with her and I have a ball or I have food or I have a reward on me, nothing else matters in the whole world. She knows, hey, I love this guy. I love this treat, this reward. I'm going to work. What can I do to gain that reward and play with you? I just recently got a bite pillow that she loves. And so when I go out, she's like pouncing, like, let me do it. And I'll do some obedience and then she'll get it. It's transactional. And I can't stress enough. So, I mean, to answer your question about the harnesses, look, yes, of course they were made to allow dogs to pull safer, and that's what you're getting. So that doesn't surprise me. And I want you to watch my recent video, The Harness Created a Dog Training Nightmare, because that's going to answer all your questions. But again, like having the slip leash on is important to hold the dog accountable, to teach them, right? So when we're using dog training equipment, we're trying to teach the dog how to behave. Once the dog understands how to behave and learns the behaviors, you don't need the equipment until you do, right? So that's it. So just watch that video. But again, like maybe this is a whole podcast in itself, but the amount of people I literally want to do a social experiment. Every time I'm out and I'm traveling, I want to go up and say, hey, I want you to recall your dog. I want you to ask your dog to sit. And I can almost promise you my life that unless there's a squeaker or a toy or a treat involved, the dog is going to not, like, Fido, come. The dog is not going to listen at all. They're head down. They're sniffing. They do not give a shit that you exist on that leash. Your relationship is garbage. Now, if your dog does come, and then I want you to ask the dog to sit with just putting your hands at the side, just say, Fido, sit, and see if your dog does it. I can almost guarantee that 9 times out of 10, every time, at scale, thousands of dogs will not do anything. They won't come back, and they won't, if they pass the, and these are the most basic things you could ever ask a dog to do, which doesn't really matter, but it matters at the big scale of your dog literally not having the relationship that they deserve with you. It's just so bad. And as a professional who dedicated his whole life for this, nobody sees it when they're out. Like, I see it everywhere I go. Like, it's the only thing I see. I'm like, that dog and that owner are so bad. Like, they don't care about it. Like, I shouldn't say they don't care. It's the owner has no idea that allowing their dog to control their entire life is pushing their dog's relationship away from them at a huge cost. Anyway, rant over. All right, next one. Crazy college student. That's a funny name. Love your podcast. Puppy advice. Hello. First, congratulations on your baby boy. Second, I love your podcast and YouTube videos. They've helped me become a better dog groomer and pet owner. Question. I have a 4-month-old husky mix puppy that I've recently walking on the leash and training manners. I want to train him how to go out with me while I'm riding my horse. Any advice on where to start? Yeah, I think I think the best thing to do is try to... there's a guy in Stowe, Vermont. I don't know if anybody has been there that's listening, but there's a guy in Stowe, Vermont that actually runs around Stowe with his black horse in his lab. It's like his thing. I don't know why he does it or whatever, but he does. And so the horse just literally chases. It's actually in one of my videos. If you go way back, I did it a couple years ago, and he's in one of the videos with the two golden doodles. Anyway, you can see it there if you want on my YouTube channel. This guy actually just like the dog just like follows and he uses hand commands. So I think it depends on like where you're riding with your horse. Excuse me. Because I think that matters. By the way, that video is called Training 2 Out of Control Doodles at Once. It's on my YouTube channel. You can check it out. You can check that horse out with the dog. So I don't really know how he necessarily trained his dog, but I can tell you that you just have to start. I think the more normal you have your dogs riding next to you or behind your horse, the better. And I think it's a natural thing of like the dog understanding boundaries that when you stop with your horse, your dog stops. You could have somebody behind you with like a long line, kind of holding your dog accountable when they pass certain things. The e-collar is going to be huge. So off leash, like checking at. Quick little tap with the e-collar to keep the dog into place. There's a lot of ways to do it, but I'd have to really know a lot more about it to give you exact information. There's a big part of me that wants to move out west and have a little farm and do a little dog training getaway every month to pay my bills, and that would make me happy. So the out west and that type of like horsemanship and dogmanship and just working with animals really fires up my passion. I think that they go hand in hand. I think that lifestyle is really what my soul likes. Being out west in the mountains surrounded by animals who don't speak English that just understand body language is amazing. And then being able to fly people out as a destination, like staying in teepees and stuff, would be amazing. So I think that's my 5-year goal, is to get a property out west and create a dog training experience where people come out once a month and we train dog trainers and we do shadow programs and we do basically what I'm doing now, but out west, but making it more of a retreat for longer periods of time. It's definitely been floating around my brain. That would make me the happiest human. That would fulfill and my wife loves the mountains as well, and she likes outdoors. So if anybody has property out west, Montana, Colorado, Wyoming, that has farm or anything like that, hit me up, because I'd like to start creating some special getaways like that. I think it would be cool. But yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I would just say start doing it. I think the best thing to do is just train your dog off leash in general, and then have the expectation of the dog to be in your vicinity. I don't know what you want your dog to do. I know your dog's not going to run faster than your horse. So staying behind you, staying with you. I would just have like a solid, like stay in my vicinity behavior. So anyway, I know this is a long end of a podcast, but I got a lot on my mind. I've been taking some time off. I've realized I'm working on myself every day and becoming a human and trying to make myself a better human. And so I'm learning, you know, when I go away to certain areas, like I went to Turks and Caicos and I was like, it was beautiful. And I did it for my family. I bought my mom, my sister and my wife it was an all-inclusive trip for them at a beautiful resort in Turks and Caicos. But I just was losing my mind. I was like going crazy. And when we do things like when we went to Colorado and Aspen, or we just went to Vermont, like I was able to work. I was able to put out videos. I was able to put out content. So I really do like, and we're going on tour next month. So I just can't travel without working. It makes me really anxious. I feel like I'm falling behind. I just need to keep going. So that's why I'm really excited for tour, because we get to do both. We're traveling, we're working, we're filming, we're creating content. It's amazing. So I can just see myself in the next 4 to 5 years getting a place that allows me to, you know, take care of animals and teach people. Anyway, fired up, got a lot on my mind. I'm excited for the future. Thank you guys for listening. I'll talk to you Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.